I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I got to tell you, folks, from Ireland to, well, folks, I'm sure his backyard somewhere doing a video for the Tribune Review. He's always busy. Doug is actually enjoying the day off, but Jessica Walliser is here. It's your Organic Gardeners, and it'd be a great day to get on the phone right now and give us a call to get all of your questions answered. We're going to get to the phones very shortly, so first come, first serve. All of our lines are open. 866-391-1020, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. And let's give the 10th caller right now a $25 gift certificate to the good folks that really are Sorgles out there in Wexford. It's 412-922-1020. Ladies and gentlemen, here she is from TribLive.com and always out doing something to promote organic gardening, Jessica Walliser. Good morning.
Good morning, Rob Pratt. How are you?
I'm good. So Davey Tree will be here in a little bit.
They will be here to talk about seasonal tree issues, as always, and we're excited to have them here in studio. And as far as I know, Mrs. Know-It-All will be joining us a little later in the program as well. But in the meantime, I completely concur with what Rob said, which is call in with your gardening questions. We're going to try to have a jam-packed hour here full of lots of gardening questions. And I know one question that's going to be on people's mind with all of the rain that we have had. Now, I was out west in the desert last week, so it was a little different story. And we came back here to Lush Green, and I heard from the cat sitter that it was crazy with the rain almost every day. And so that is perfect recipe for tomato diseases. Fungal diseases, the blight, septoria leaf spot, and other issues on tomatoes. So if your tomatoes look lovely right now, this is just a forewarning that if we continue to get rain like we have been getting, we are going to start to see fungal issues on tomatoes. They usually start, from the bottom up on the plant because they have splashed up, the spores have splashed up out of the soil and onto the leaves. And so you'll see blotching, leaf spots, yellowing on those lower leaves first. When you start to see that, get out a sharp pair of pruners that are nice and clean, disinfect them with some rubbing alcohol, and cut off those diseased leaves and throw them away in the garbage, because that's going to keep the spores and the disease from spreading up the plant. That is one thing you can do to keep that at bay. You can also start using now an organic fungicide as a preventative, especially on those lower leaves, both the upper and lower leaf surface of the plant. The one we typically recommend is one called Serenade. It is a biofungicide. It's based actually on a naturally occurring bacteria that combats the fungal organisms, and it works really beautifully, especially as a preventative. So that's one that I recommend. Again, it's called Serenade. There's some other organic fungicides on the market as well, but that one tends to work the best for me. But again, they're best used as a preventative. Once you start to see the spots on those leaves, it's really difficult to get them under control. This is just the warning that it's coming with this weather that we have been having, and everybody loves their tomatoes, that's for sure.
So last night we had this little thing called Beaver County Boom. So I'm out of my backyard, 10 o'clock at night, taking the trash out, just kind of doing what I'm doing. And because of the beautiful fireworks from Zambelli's, I realized it's a jungle out there. Because of this crazy weather, I have trees that are overgrown, bushes that are overgrown, weeds that are overgrown, and I do my best to stay on top of it. I mean, I know you have to just say it's Mother Nature, embrace it for what it is, but I got to believe because of the temperatures, the rain, the warm, the humidity, it's definitely caused a lot of things to grow, hasn't it?
It has, which is a good thing. But also, in your case, sometimes not a good thing. When we're talking about weeds, it's definitely not a good thing. So, no. The whole idea of it really is to just keep on top of things, especially when it comes to weeds. I mean, there's so many things that you can do as a weed preventative that keeps them from getting that bad, no matter what kind of weather that we have. Just a layer of mulch down in the spring. And it's not too late to mulch. If you didn't get to your mulching this spring, weed your beds and then put down a layer of mulch, and that's going to set you up for the whole rest of the season and keep those weeds down no matter what kind of weather we have. So that's like a really good preventative thing that everybody should be doing. But if those weeds are getting overgrown, the absolute worst possible thing you can do, is let them go to flower and set seed. Because when that happens, where you had one weed, you now have 10,000 weeds. So never let things set flower and set seed, even if that means you're just, you know, whacking them down with a weed whacker or mowing them over with the lawnmower. Just keep them from going to seed.
Listen, I didn't mulch this year. Just didn't want to spend the money, and I don't have that much of property. Is mulching a good thing or
it's
a bad thing?
It's a very good thing. It's a very good thing as long as you're using a good mulch product.
Right.
So for me, you know, if you've got tree and shrub bed, I always like to use, you know, the shredded bark mulch or even arborist chips. So you can, you know, get a if you see the arborist out trimming, you know, the neighbor's lawn and using the chips, you can have the, hey, dump those in my driveway. Those are fine to use around trees or shrubs. You don't want to use those in a perennial or a vegetable garden because those plants are really shallow rooted. But in shrub beds, they are fine to use. There's very little chance of disease transmission between those chips and, you know, and an existing tree that you have on your property. So there's no worries about that. You know, in the vegetable garden, I, you know, usually use straw or, you know, high quality compost to mulch the vegetable garden. Even untreated grass clippings will work. But all of that goes a long way towards cutting down weeds for the whole rest of the season.
All right. Now, real quick, I want everybody to know that it was Judy from McDonald, the winner of that gift certificate.
Yay, Judy.
From Sorgles. And Janoski's, we'll have that gift certificate in about 20 minutes from now. Second day of their grand opening of the farm market expansion. So we hope you get out there at 10 o'clock this morning. They actually open at 8 o'clock. We've got Anna, Brad, Jim, Frank. We're going to get to all of your calls in just a moment. But you have the final 2 minutes before the break. What's on your mind? Anything?
Oh, my gosh. Everything. Everything. There's so much that's beautiful right now in the garden. Lots of maintenance chores to be done. If you haven't done things like deadhead your peonies and your German bearded iris, which are now done blooming, this is the time to go out with a nice pair of pruners, cut off those spent blooms. It'll keep the foliage beautiful, cut down on fungal diseases for the rest of the year. And in those cases, those two plants, it won't generate more blooms. But with your annuals and flowers in your containers, deadheading will generate more blooms. It's just a regular maintenance chore that's an important thing, you know, to continue to do throughout the season.
All right, very short break. We'll check some sports. We'll come back. Jessica Wallace, you're in today. Doug is off. We'll get to all of your phone calls. You can reach us via Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com, or text us on the Wright Automotive Line, the best deal in town. Good morning. All right, Jessica Wallace, you're here today. This is The Organic Gardeners. Doug is enjoying the day off. Let's go to Anna in Monroeville. Good morning, Anna. Welcome to KDK Radio.
Good morning. I finally got through. This is awesome.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. I am having such a problem, not just with weeds, but my dear little blueberry patch. It starts in the spring when I get this spittle bug. This stuff I call spittle bug. It's real slimy, little white deposits on the leaves.
Uh-huh.
And so I kind of try to hand pick that, and I find the little tiny yellow things in there that I have to pinch to kill.
Uh-huh.
And I spray, you know, Captain Jack and these other things. And of course now that everything's getting washed off, and now I've got my annual teeny tiny ants, and I try to sprinkle things around the base, and of course that gets washed off.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I combat them?
Well, what are the ants doing to the plants?
They're eating the berries.
Do they really get in there and eat the blueberries?
They do.
No kidding.
I pull the berry off, and they're soft, and I look and there they are, these teeny miniature little things just crawling right out like they're having a picnic.
Okay, well, that's really unusual. So congratulations for having a garden anomaly, Anna. typically, ants are very, very good in the garden. I mean, they do help process and aerate the soil. They, you know, they are generally considered they're either beneficial or benign in the garden. So in your case, though, that you're actually physically seeing them harming those blueberries, yes, there's probably some type of control that you need to take in this particular instance. Actually, I like the borax-based ant baits that you can get. You can get them on the market. People use them in their house all the time. You do have to be extremely careful if you have any outdoor pets or if your neighbor has an outdoor pet that comes over into your yard, you do not, you know, because this will harm them as well. So be very careful when you use it.
I have my blueberries in a cage.
Okay, good. So that would be a place, a borax-based ant bait that you can do and put it under there, and that will help bring them under control. The other thing that you can do is actually Coat the base of the, this might actually work even better for you, is coat the base of the stems of the blueberry bushes with a product called Tangle Trap. And Tangle Trap, I mean, you can get it on Amazon. You can get it in a nursery supply, a catalog, things like that. It's basically a non-drying glue that you apply to the, you know, just a strip around the base of that trunk, maybe a 1-inch wide strip of the tree or the shrub, and that will keep the ants. It's a non-drying glue. They get stuck in it and they die, basically. And it's what I use. So, for example, the ants always get in my hummingbird feeder, right? So I always put a little strip of that Tangle Trap onto the, you know, the hummingbird feeder, the shepherd's hook I use, and it keeps the ants out of the hummingbird feeder.
Okay.
So that would keep them off of the blueberry bush, which would be a very good thing for you to do. As far as the spittle bugs go, the spittle bug damage is primarily in the spring. It can distort some of the new growth. It really has, you know, very little negative effect. Their season is fairly short. I think the ants are probably a bigger problem for you than the spittle bugs are in this situation. So I think that Tangle Trap would really work.
Okay. And yesterday I found, I danced between the raindrops, I found a little green worm the size of a piece of thread.
Okay.
What do I spray on for that? Because evidently I've got cute little worms that like me too.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't worry, but if you're just seeing one, I really don't worry about it. I mean, insects exist in a garden, and the only reason you would really ever need to take any action against them is if they're causing any sort of significant damage. Just seeing one caterpillar of some sort is really nothing to worry about.
All right, let's keep it going. Next stop's going to be the North Hills. Jim is right now on the line wanting to talk to Jessica Walliser. Good morning, Jim. Welcome to KDK Radio. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. What's on your mind?
Hey, I got a question for you. I'm caring for my sister's plant that passed 4 years ago. It's a peace plant.
Okay.
And every spring, it sends me these beautiful flowers. It's the third time I transplanted. I got it in like a 3-gallon pot. Now it just keeps, I count them this morning. It's like 23 flowers that come from it.
Wow.
And, I mean, it's a big plant, beautiful plant. My question to you is when the flowers, the buds themselves fade, and, you know, they get black and things like that. Do you cut them off or do you just pull them off or what?
Yeah, I would cut them off. You don't want to pull them out because a lot of times when you pull them out, you end up pulling out a chunk of the plant, which isn't necessarily so good. So I would just follow that flower stem all the way down to the base of the plant and use a nice sharp pair of scissors or a sharp, clean pair of pruning shears and go ahead and cut them off of the plant. And that will prevent a seed pod from forming, which they can actually put quite a bit of energy into forming those seed pods. And sometimes that can lead to a decline in the plant. So you want to do it as soon as the flower fades.
Okay, so the second question of the plant is, I get these, the leaves of the plant, they'll brown up every once in a while. Should I be cutting those off or leave them alone?
Yeah, if it's leaves that are around the base of the plant, sort of the outside edge of the plant, that's sort of a natural senescence. They naturally fall off every now and then. So yes, as they brown, you definitely want to, I'd say when they're probably about 50% yellow is when you want to go ahead and also, you know, follow the leaf stem all the way down to the base of the plant and cut those off. The reason you don't want them to just sort of die on the plant is because that can promote and spread fungal disease. So you want to make sure that you get those
off. How about if it's only the tip turning brown?
If it's only the, yep, if it's only the tips turning brown, then you have a separate issue, which is really common in a lot of houseplants, and that is salt burn. And that comes from fertilizer salts that are held in the soil. They're, you know, uptaken into the plant. When the plant absorbs water, it also absorbs those fertilizers. And the farthest away that they can go in the plant, if they're not used by the plant, is on the tips of the leaves. And so when you see brown, crunchy tips of leaves on houseplants, that's fertilizer burn. That's too much fertilizer salts. And so what you have to make sure that you do is, number one, don't fertilize it any more than once a month, and only fertilize from March through August when the plant is actively growing. You never fertilize a houseplant in the winter. And then you also want to make sure that every time you water, that you're actually flushing water through the drainage holes in the bottom of the pot. So at least 20% of the irrigation water that goes in the top of the pot needs to come out through the drainage holes in the bottom, because that will help flush out those fertilizer salts to keep them from accumulating on the leaf tips.
I generally give it 2 wine bottles, you know, once a week. Should I split that up and give it a wine
bottle? You drink that much wine?
Me and the plant, yeah.
Two bottles a week, buddy.
For me. I flood it with two wine bottles, which is, a pint.
Yeah, it doesn't drain out the holes in the bottom, though, huh?
Yeah, sometimes I have a reservoir in the bottom.
Okay.
Sometimes you'll find some liquid down there. But is that too much water, or should it be like?
I actually want you to use more, but I want you to do it maybe every 10 days, and I want you it's a big pot, so this is going to be hard for you to do, but you really should have at least 20% of what you put in the top flushing through and coming out the drainage holes in the bottom, and then get it out of that saucer because you don't want it to sit in that saucer because that again will get reabsorbed by the plant. The plant. Roots can sit in that water and end up leading to root rot. So ideally, you really should flush it all the way through the plant.
Summer solstice, does that affect the garden at all? That day we have
a longer day, the plants might be a little happier because they get a little more sunshine, just like you and I. But
now, daylight savings time and all of that, was that really created because of farming?
I don't know. That's what I've always heard. I don't know if it's a rumor or not, but that's what I've always heard. I could do away with it, though. It's challenging for parents.
I've heard a lot of rumors about me that are true. Anyway.
I do not want to go there, Rob Pratt.
Anyway, listen, I took you a little while to get that. We got about a minute to go before the break. So what are you writing about? What are you doing? Where are you speaking?
All kinds of great things. I'm really excited because this week I have two lectures. I have one for a local garden club. And then on Friday, it's the Pennsylvania State Master Gardener Conference.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, up at Seven Springs. Nice. And so I'm going to be giving two talks there on Friday. But unfortunately, you have to be a master gardener to go. But if you are a master gardener, make sure that you're going because it's a great lineup of speakers. Not just me, but a whole great lineup of speakers. So I'm going to be talking there about, I think container gardening and attracting beneficial bugs to your garden.
Best way to find out everything, and it took me about 12 years to figure this out, jessicawalliser.com. Okay, just go there. Everything that you need to know. She does incredible work. We'll come back. Horticulturist, by the way, degree, agriculture, all that stuff. The best university for it anywhere on the planet, Penn State.
And with us today is arborist Todd Scherbondi. Welcome this morning. I apologize for calling you the wrong name this morning.
Don't sweat that at all. It's early. I understand.
I know. It's only been a couple of years that we've known each other,
right.
Todd.
No big deal.
I'm a little behind the curve on all that.
Not a big deal.
So as I was talking about in the first segment of the show, the fungal issues this year with tomato plants and in the vegetable garden because of all the rain. What's that doing to our trees? What are you guys seeing?
Well, we're seeing a lot out there right now. Thank you guys for having me flying solo this morning. No Olivia with me this morning.
Yeah.
I apologize. But we are seeing tons of issues out there, unfortunately. So what specifically are we seeing? What are you looking for? A lot of times we see brown leaves on trees maybe look like they're wet or wilty. A lot of times you see fire blight, which is a really prevalent disease this year. Now, fire blight is something that won't kill the tree necessarily, but it will rob the tree of nutrients and resources going down the road. Anytime you're breaking down the food-producing mechanisms, the leaves of the tree, you run the risk of having some problems down the road. But realistically, it's not going to kill the tree, which is a good thing.
Are there particular trees that are more prone to fire blight than others?
Absolutely. I just read on the blog yesterday, the Davey blog, that pear trees are just wrecked this year. And a lot of times you'll see the other like crab apples, cherry trees, sometimes, things like that. Peaches, I think, are in the same boat. So realistically, a lot of the fruit trees are having the same types of issues. Now, I did get a call from a client the other day, said, "Hey, we just put in a cherry tree. I see three yellow leaves. What's going on?" So three yellow leaves, not necessarily something to be overly concerned with, but certainly warrants a call, especially if it's a newly planted tree. We do see transplant shock. Similar symptoms to not enough water with all of the rainfall and everything we've gotten. Overwatering can sometimes lead to trees, struggling a little bit. Those root systems may be waterlogged and not necessarily able to take up nutrients the right way. So transplant shock, a big thing, especially if you've planted a tree within the last 6 weeks or so. So keep an eye on that as well. Nothing to necessarily do with that. Just manage and keep an eye on things. Call us if you're having issues. If you think it's an issue, we can try to identify that before it becomes a major issue down the road.
What about splotches and spots on leaves, whether it's a maple or an oak tree? What if you start to see that? What should you do?
Yeah, we're definitely going to see some of that going forward. Some things like some tar spot. Mm-hmm. And there's another disease called verticillium wilt, which will kill maybe portions of a maple tree or a sycamore or something like that. But definitely want to call early as opposed to late. May not necessarily be able to do anything right away, but we can get you on a management plan, you know, proper pruning and dormancy to alleviate the dead wood and maybe, you know, thin the tree out so it allows proper airflow through there. Recommend soil testing to ensure that it's getting the proper nutrients. Sometimes, just like you're right, if you're out too late and you're not sleeping well, you're not eating right, you know, you're going to have some issues going forward. Maybe you're not feeling well, get the flu or something. But same thing with the trees. If they're, you know, in a position where they're not feeling well, there's a higher risk for infections going forward. So we want to make sure that we get the soil test and understand what's going on with the tree. Maybe we can amend the soil even to, you know, bring it back up to speed. Mushroom compost. I know you guys use tons of compost and leaf litter as well. Mm-hmm. I know there was a university around here that's using leaf litter as their mulch. Great approach. Adding a lot. And we always talk about it. I was thinking about this on the way, and we're always talking about over mulching. And I'm telling you guys, don't over mulch. Get rid of the mulch. It's your volcano mulching. But mulch is a good thing inherently. Let's get a good
when it's
mulch
done properly.
When it's done
right?
properly, thank you for making that caveat. But when it's done properly, a good mulch layer can actually help to alleviate soil or help to improve that soil moisture, keep the roots nice and warm, and a lot of times it will lock in some moisture The trees may need, you know. So yeah. I don't want to knock mulch. I'm not here to knock mulch today. So, but again,
done properly.
A lot of the issues that we see start early in the season. You know, when the buds just start to break, whenever the plant is just starting to open up, it's always better to call us and get an eyeball on it before it gets too late into the season. Because after the infection set in.
Yeah, it's
a lot of
really
times.
Hard
yeah,
to control.
It's really yeah. difficult to control.
All those
that,
fungicides
so.
Are best as a protectant. But listen,
yes.
we have actually have a tree pruning question,
Love
if
it.
You don't mind,
yeah.
Todd, that we're
going to
take from Frank in Coriopolis. Frank, good morning. How are you?
Okay. Thanks for taking the call. The question I have is with all the rain and everything, obviously everything's overgrown. I'm looking out my kitchen window now, and I'm looking at a dogwood tree that we've had for a number of years. But the tree looks like, if you're going to do a drawing like of an explosion or fireworks, that's what the tree looks like. In fact, the right side of the tree is so overgrown that it looks like only about a foot or less above the ground. It'll be touching the ground. How in the world would I prune that? What's the best way to prune that if I do?
That's wonderful. Yeah. To be honest, a lot of people elevate or prune the low limbs to get it up to a certain area, maybe 3 foot or 6 foot so they can get through there. I like the look of the lower scaffold branches, the natural look. You know, you don't see that on dogwoods often because they are understory or woods trees. So if you can allow those lower branches, a lot of times it will actually help to improve the coolness around that root system, keep it cool during the hot summer months. I wouldn't necessarily prune those off unless they're aesthetically displeasing.
But again, it's close to the ground. It's ready to touch the ground.
That's okay. Keep it pruned up off the ground. Get a nice layer of properly installed mulch down around there to help improve, keep that root system nice and warm. But,
when is the best time to prune
dogwoods? Great question. If you're going to prune it, maybe get the low limbs up off the ground a little bit. You're going to want to wait till later on in the season here, September, October, maybe even into November, December, only because you run the risk of spreading dogwood anthracnose, which is a leaf and twig disease, by the way. It will kill both
and
the leaves
really
and
nasty.
The twigs. And it is detrimental.
So right now, just go after some of the stuff that's because really the tree, again, I'm looking at it right now, it's grossly overgrown.
I would not do any pruning on that dogwood right now. I mean, you could lose the whole tree by pruning it in wet weather like this when the
Absolutely.
Active growth is happening.
Yeah. Make sure you're sanitizing your hand tools as well. Clorox, Lysol.
Yep. So listen, for more information about Davy Tree and to ask what's going on with your trees, go to davy.com/KDKA. And don't forget, you can always call the experts at Davy Tree at 855-982-TREE. That's 855-982-8733. And we would like to welcome back to the program our Mrs. Know-It-All. She is Denise Schreiber, a fellow horticulturist, garden writer, and all-around garden goddess. Denise, welcome. How are you this week?
A little wet, actually.
How about it?
I was out in the torrential downpour last night, and I was on Strachan Road, which has a tendency to flood, and the person in front of me kept stopping. I'm like, please move. I don't want to float away.
Right. Was it flooded already by the time you were driving through?
No, but the water was starting to pond.
Yeah.
Because I was already on the road when it started. But anyway, I am also speaking at the Penn State Master Gardener Conference. I am speaking on Saturday with a couple of friends. Brie Arthur is going to be there. And so, you know, we'll get to say hello. But what I wanted to talk about is, you know, with all this rain, you know, and last weekend was ungodly humid, and, you know, the temperatures have been all over the map now. But your plants are actually using up nutrients faster, or they're losing them because they're actually getting flushed out of the soil, especially in container plants outside. You know, it's, you know, we have, you know, 3-4 inches, you know, in an hour. And so you actually want to make sure you're keeping up with the fertilizing of your plants. No matter what you're using, you really need to make sure you do that on a regular basis, because a lot of plants, especially parsley, my parsley is struggling in all this rain, and they do not like a lot of water. So they especially need a little extra kick, so to speak, to keep them, you know, growing vigorously.
That is great advice, and you're right about it really leaching out so quickly out of containers when we have this much water, you know, naturally, in addition to any irrigation water that people are adding. Those nutrients really do leach out. Thank you so much, Denise, as always, for your excellent advice.
All right, don't forget, you can text us on the Right Automotive Line, the best deal in town, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. Let's go to Anita in McKeesport. Hi, Anita. Welcome to KDK Radio.
Oh, hello, Jess and Todd and
It's Rob. That's okay.
That's okay. That's okay. You know what? I forget my name sometimes, too.
Sorry. I didn't want to exclude you. But anyways, I have poison ivy growing up my maple tree. Will burnout harm the bark if it hits the bark, if I spray the poison ivy?
Oh, well, first of all, Anita, I love that you want to use burnout, which is an organic herbicide. However, right. I will tell you right out the bat that it is not going to be super effective on poison ivy. You're going to have to do multiple applications, and even then it still might not get all the way down to the root. With woody plants mm-hmm. like that, the burnout is definitely a big challenge. As far as it hurting the bark of the plant, I don't think that it really would, especially if it's an established tree. Yeah. Todd, what do you think? Do you think it has potential to harm the bark?
I don't think it's going to bother the bark of the tree. My recommendation, though, would be with you, prune it off or get it cut back in a way, you know, maybe long sleeves and gloves and get it cut back. Treating it is going to just encourage more growth coming up and around. Too,
yeah, so you can actually cut it off at the base of the plant and treat that cut stump. Yeah. Apply, you know, it to that cut stump and do it multiple times, and that will actually absorb a little bit faster into the plant and probably give you better dieback.
Yeah, don't pull it off the tree, though. Just leave it there.
Yeah, leave the vine die up in the tree because, right, people pull it off, and then it pulls the bark off of the tree,
and then
you
it's
end
all
up
over
with
you.
All over you. Exactly. Yeah. So cut it off and then apply it to that cut. That's going to be the best way to do it.
All right, let's take one more call before we have to say goodbye to Todd and Jessica for this Sunday. Here's Ken in Zillion Opal. Ken, good morning. Welcome to KDK Radio.
Hi, how y'all doing? I have a general question. What would be a good fertilizer for perennials? And also, I planted some forsythia bushes this year.
Yeah, so for perennials, for me, I don't actually ever add any supplemental fertilizer to my perennial beds. I just compost, put an inch of compost on the surface of the soil just once a year in the spring, and that's all the nutrients those perennials need. But if you don't get to do that, you can use a complete granular organic fertilizer, something like Plant Tone, Or another maybe 3-4-3, you know, in the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium levels on the front of that container. Something not too high in nitrogen because you don't want to have a lot of excessive green growth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just sprinkle that in around the plants, and you should be good. And as far as the forsythia, you can actually use the same thing on that forsythia. Just a basic general 3-4-3, even something, you could even go like a 1-3-1 or something. You don't need a whole lot with perennials and well-established plants like that.
I love the compost idea, too, because you're getting microorganisms in the soil, which is you're not getting with fertilizers.
Right, exactly. So. All those good little microorganisms that help feed your plants.
All right, thank you for the call. You've got 1 minute before we have to say goodbye, so it's all yours.
I've got 1 minute, and look at how sunshiny it is outside, which
you
is
You actually have about a minute and 15 seconds.
A minute
seconds.
And 15 seconds. What do we do with a minute and 15 seconds, Todd? You know what? I want to talk to you real quick.
Go ahead.
And we're going to have to do this quick. But
no problem.
I'm noticing canker on the spruces a lot. Talk about what that looks like real quick.
Everywhere. So if you look at, if you take the needles, rip them off, the secondary needles, not the ones that just came out, the ones that are further back in, take the needles off the plant. Put them in your hand and look at them. If they're purple or brown, and there's little black spotches, sometimes you'll have to get a magnifying glass or a hand lens and look at that. There, chances are you're dealing with rhizosphere. If you're getting, which is a disease that can potentially kill the tree, if you're getting white resinous sap oozing out everywhere, again, another disease,
like
Cytospora canker, on the trunk, bad news for sure. And Colorado spruce, a lot of the spruces are high mountain trees. They live in a little more of an arid condition than what we have here. They'll grow here. People say, wow, mine's dying. It should be growing. They will grow here, but you're looking maybe 20 years tops.
Yeah.
So realistically, bad news.
Yeah, unfortunately. I'm noticing a lot of it right now.
Oh, so, it's everywhere.
Yeah, thank you so much, Todd, for joining
us
on the program. Remember, the Organic Gardeners always aim to teach you how to create a better place to garden and a safer place to live.
All right, Jessica Wallace, thank you. We'll continue to read all about it in the Tribune Review and, of course, Todd Schiavondi, Davey.com. They do incredible work, and they're here every other Sunday with Doug and Jess right through the season. So please make sure that you join them at that time.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.